A cold wind flogged Kane as he crouched behind the neck of his stolen steed. He pushed the animal all the way from the city, cutting cross-country between villages to save precious minutes. The moon, full and red, tracked his progress over the plains. A blood moon, the sailors called it. Night of ill omens. The wound he'd received from the sorcerer's knife, scrawled like a streak of bloody charcoal down his forearm, burned like the blazes, but the pain was nothing next to the rage boiling in his chest. He had been presented with an opportunity he never thought to have in 100 lifetimes, to avenge his father's death, and he had let it slip through his fingers like wet sand. Damn Raoul. It was clear the man had made some kind of a deal with that creature, Levictus. But what drew them together? What plan had they hatched, and how did it involve Josie? Kane knew Raoul. The man's dreams were grandiose, but teamed up with one who could conjure the shadows, how far could he go? The questions haunted Kane, all during the harrowing ride. Kane felt sorry for the animal, but he didn't let up as evening approached in deepening strands of purple and blue. Nothing mattered except reaching Josie. If anything happened to her, he'd never forgive himself. He should have gotten her farther away, hidden her in another city where she'd be safe. The recriminations battered at him as he peered through the forest's gloom. In the newly fallen night, Kane almost passed by the cabin before he picked out its white lines of wattle in the darkness. Kane leaned across the entrance to the cabin. His gaze darted to the corners of the front room. The place had an empty feel, devoid of life. The hearth had been allowed to go out. The dying embers were sunken beneath the bed of ashes. A few pieces of furniture were scattered about in shambles. A sharp odor hung in the air. As he stepped over the threshold, Kane spotted the still mound of a body.
Cass.
A pike with a shortened shaft lay beside the old man's limp hand. Kane looked down at the man who had raised him and didn't know how to react. Titanic weights pulled at his insides. The walls of the cabin closed around him, cutting him away from the night. For a moment, Kane allowed himself to feel remorse for the way he had left things between them. He had loved this man, and yet hated him for not being his true father. With an effort that showed in the whites of his knuckles, he shut those feelings away and turned his mind to more immediate matters. Blood stained the weapon's point. So the old man hadn't gone down without a fight.
Good for you, Cass.
The blood was sticky, not yet fully dried. The rest of the room was empty. No sign of Josie. It looked like the bulk of Raoul's men had entered through the front door and won by a broken window. What Kane thought was blood spattered across the sill turned out to be wine. The door to the back room was half closed. Scant moonbeams fumbled across the crude floorboards. A garment was laid over the disarrayed covers of a crude cot. An icy fist closed around Kane's heart at the sight of Josie's borrowed gown. It had been slashed to bloody strips. He searched the entire cabin for the body, but found nothing. Outside, he made a sweep of the yard. There were marks in the dirt where one or more bodies had been dragged amid a crowd of hoofprints. Kane was no tracker, but he could see they had come from the direction of Othar and returned the same way. He must have just missed them. Of course, they would stay to the main roads, secure in their numbers. Rage filled Kane's thoughts, at Raoul, at himself, at the gods if they existed. The Brotherhood had Josie. A thought flashed through his head. If they were riding with wounded, he might still be able to catch them. He started toward his horse, but stopped when he saw it. The horse shuddered like it had an ague. Strings of milk-white foam drooled from its mouth. It was blown. Useless. It wouldn't run again tonight, if ever. Kane gave the animal what mercy remained in him. He stripped off its bridle and saddle and dropped them on the ground. A wasted effort. It would probably drop over dead before morning. He had failed them. Josie, Cass, Matthias, his parents, they were all gone now. He was alone. Grief sliced up his insides like a river of broken glass. He wanted to scream to the heavens, but the cry lodged in his throat. He had nothing left. Then, a whisper-like touch settled on his shoulder.
I'm so sorry, Kane.
Kit's inner radiance surrounded him like the light of 1,000 fireflies. He wanted her comfort, wanted it more keenly than he had ever wanted anything in his life since the day his father died. But he couldn't accept it.
Where have you been? Out in some meadow, picking flowers, and dancing with the starlings?
She floated around to face him.
I was here, Kane.
Yet you did nothing.
I couldn't. I saw them kill Cass and drag the girl away. But there wasn't anything I could do.
You could have come to find me. I could have stopped it.
Would you have listened?
Of course I would.
No. You stopped listening to me a long time ago. And it only got worse when you met that girl.
Her name was Josie.
If you want to know where they took her...
Say her name!
Josie, okay? Her name's Josie, but she's not dead.
I saw the dress, Kit.
Listen, you idiot! She's still alive! They took her and rode off like a bag of demons. They left the dress so you would get all hellfire mad and go riding after them without a thought in that wooden head of yours.
He strode through her as if she weren't there, walked up to the door of the cabin, and stood on the threshold.
I never wanted this for you.
She came up beside him.
Neither did your mother.
Don't, Kit.
I was happy in my world, Kane. But I had to come when I heard your mother's call. She understood it would be hard for you in this place, born of two peoples belonging to neither. And I knew, the first time I saw you, that I would love you forever. That's the curse of my people. We live and we love forever. Even after the ones we love die and pass into the great dark.
Kit.
Troubled feelings rumbled in the depths of his soul. They chipped away at his resolve. It made him feel weak and pathetic.
Don't you think I mourned for your loss, Kane? Don't you think I cried myself sick after what happened to your parents? But you were a stone. You never cried.
What good would it have done them?
But tears, hot and bitter, sprang to his eyes now. Kit rested her head on his arm.
We don't cry for them, Kane. We cry for ourselves. Cass understood that.
And now he's dead too.
He died doing what he knew was right.
Kane thought of the bloody spear. Cass had died a hero. Would the same be said of him when his time came?
It's funny. For years after they were gone, I thought losing my parents had made me a stronger person, tougher. Now I wonder if I didn't lose the best part of myself that night. The man with the black blades, he's like me, isn't he? A monster.
You are not a monster.
There's darkness inside of me, Kit. I've always known it was there, just below the surface. And you've seen what happens when I lose control.
She turned away.
He sent that shadow snake after me, didn't he? Now he's working with Rahl, and Josie is gone. So who the fuck is he, Kit?
He serves the Lords of the Shadow.
1,000 questions jostled his mind, but only one was important.
How do I kill him?
He is flesh and blood, just like you. Cut him and he will bleed.
I tried that. I tried, Kit. He has powers I don't understand, magic I can't match.
Her slender finger touched the space over his heart.
The blood calls to its own, Kane. You are your mother's son. You already possess everything you need.
Then I'm damned. And so is Josie.
They took her alive, so she must have some value to them. They won't kill her out of hand. There's still time to help her.
Now you want to help her? You couldn't stand the sight of her before.
Kit folded her arms across her chest.
I'm glad you have a mud woman in your life. I know I can't love you the way I've always dreamed. The way I wanted to.
Kit, I...
But I'll always be here for you. As a friend.
You're my best friend, Kit. You always have been. That won't ever change.
It better not. We'll find her, Kane.
I already know where she is. Rahl told me himself once. He said we were the most feared men in the Empire. That we should be lording it up in the palace.
You mean the palace? Like the big muckety-muck sticks?
Kane walked into the cabin. A storm lantern hung from a hook on the wall. He took it down and lit the wick from the hearth embers. Light filled the cabin as the lantern sprang to life. He hurled it into the back room. Flames shot to the ceiling as he strode out the door. The growing fire threw harsh shadows across the grass and against the trunks of the surrounding trees as he went around to the back of the cabin. Across the yard, the boulder hunched in the earth like the egg of a giant bird. While Kit floated over him, he squatted down beside it. He fit his hands underneath the stone and heaved. The boulder was sunk deep in its loamy home, but he would not be denied. He pulled for the memories of his father and mother, for Cass, who'd become the father he wanted and needed, even if he hadn't realized it until too late, for Josie, who needed him now. The wound in his side ached, but he didn't let up until inch by inch, the stone came free of its bed. Pale worms wriggled in the damp earth where the stone had lain. Kit crouched beside him as he pulled a moldy leather sack from the soil. He cracked it open to pull out the items inside and set them on the ground with reverence. The first was a square of sturdy broadcloth. It unfolded into a dirty gray tabard. A great sablewood tree was stitched onto the breast in black thread, the sign of his father's house. The second item was wrapped in oilcloth. Kane pulled away the covering to reveal a well-painted portrait in a plain wooden frame. Kane's father was tall and imposing in the picture. His mother looked tiny beside her husband, like a dark-leafed sapling growing in the shade of a mighty rowan tree. Her hair was long and lustrous black, her eyes mysterious pools of obsidian. While Kit mooned over the picture, Kane took out the third item. The sword's leather scabbard was in bad repair. He wiped away years of grit from the whorls carved into the pommel.
My father's blade.
Though the hilt was cool to the touch, holding it produced a burning heat in the pit of his stomach. He had pulled this weapon from his father's corpse. Now Kane would use it to sever the chains of death that had bound up his life for so long, or he would die. In either case, the matter would finally be resolved. Kane set the sword aside and pushed the other items back into the hollow. Getting behind the boulder, he heaved it back into place. Kit watched him with an intent expression.
Kane, you can't keep running from your past. It's part of who you are.
Kane snatched up the sword.
I'm not denying it. I'm finally accepting my true inheritance and everything that goes along with it.
He started back toward the trail. He had remembered a place not far where another horse could be found.
You coming?
She fell in beside him, but said nothing. He was glad for the silence. He had planning to do. A storm was coming. Good. Let the heavens pour out their tears. He'd give them a slaughter worthy of their misery. Josie's hands, clenched in the folds of her skirt, trembled as she stood before the painting. A regal man astride a fierce charger gazed down at her. His wavy black hair was cut at shoulder length in the masculine style of the previous generation. Thick brows met over a prominent aquiline nose. And the eyes, she knew them with intimate familiarity. They were her own.
Is this really my father?
A brass plaque below the portrait read, Lionel II of the House Coronada, Emperor of Nemea.
Josephine Coronada.
So many secrets, so many lies, all to preserve her identity.
How am I supposed to feel?
She didn't know, and that was the scary part. And on top of that, what had happened to her at the cabin. She folded her hands over her stomach. She wanted to curl up into a ball and die.
No.
She pulled her hands away and stood up straight. She wouldn't succumb to the terror. The Earl hadn't yielded when they took his post away. He was an old man, far past his prime, but he'd continued to fight unto his last breath, and so would she. Josie turned toward the center of the chamber. The Grand Hall of the Lucian Palace, named after the famous architect and composer Lucio Fornari, was a masterpiece of traditional Mitric architecture. Once, vibrant frescoes depicting significant events and persons of the Empire's history had covered the domed ceiling, but they had been replaced by scenes of inferior quality showcasing the church's rise to power. On the floor, a dais of marble steps dominated the eastern wall, a semicircle of massive thrones fashioned of deep-stained redwood and upholstered in purple silk crowded the highest tier. The seats of the prelate and the elector council, they represented the highest powers in both the spiritual and temporal worlds. On the wall above the dais, a giant sunburst was emblazoned in a mosaic of tiny white and gold tiles. Once that august symbol of the church's authority would have instilled a sense of awe within her. Now, knowing what she did about the council and their murderous deeds, she felt only a touch of melancholy, as if for a treasured thing lost beyond recovery. 13 wooden boxes rested on the bottom step of the dais. She had no idea what they were meant for, but it could be for nothing good. The Sacred Brotherhood had taken control of the palace, apparently under the command of the man who stood at the foot of the dais. And she was his captive as surely as if she wasted away in some dark dungeon cell. She shook her head at the uncomfortable image.
Caim will come for me.
That hope huddled close to her heart, and yet reminders of her dire predicament were all around. Hatred had sustained her on the long ride back to Othar. By the time they reached the city, she was a teary, sodden mess, bruised from thigh to collarbone. More soldiers met them at the gates and provided an escort to Celestial Hill. She'd been appalled to see the state of her beloved city. People rioted in the streets, destroying property, burning and looting. Bodies lay in the gutters, both commoners and soldiers alike. She wished she could put a stop to it somehow. But trussed over her steed like a sack of parsnips, all she could do was watch the carnage. Up the processional they rode until they reached the palace. Josie looked down at the garment she had been forced to wear. Layers of white silk brocade trailed on the floor. It reminded her of a wedding dress for a virgin bride, something she would never be. That part of her had been stripped away. Just thinking about it made her feel sick. The only other people in the hall were Marcus and Raoul, who was also an assassin, according to Caim. A dangerous man, supposedly, but he hardly looked the part. He wore a fine suit of black with starched white cuffs and collar. A slender blade with a silver guard hung at his side.
I don't care, Marcus! Drive them away! Kill them if need be! Just get them away from the gates!
Marcus saluted and stalked out of the hall. When Raoul looked over, Josie met his gaze without backing down.
Ah, a vast improvement. Now you look the part of a princess.
I'd throw this dress in your face if I had anything else to wear.
No need for hostility, Josephine. We need each other.
I don't need anything from you. You're the one who killed my father. Don't try to deny it. I know everything now.
Oh, everything? Do you know that without the council to control the people, the city is tearing itself apart?
He stepped closer until the scent of his oiled hair overwhelmed her.
Do you know that you're completely alone? A young girl in a perilous place, surrounded by perilous people?
Caim will...
Caim is dead in some gutter, or soon will be.
Look around you, princess. I hold the palace, and with it the city. Perhaps someday the entire country will bow to me.
Forget Caim and whatever romantic notions have been bouncing around inside that little skull of yours. Think of the big picture. An alliance with me would benefit us both. You would enjoy my protection, and I would gain a measure of legitimacy.
You mean marriage? Us? You're insane! I would never...
It's not so far-fetched, my dear.
Raoul sauntered toward the dais.
Worse unions have been forged for the sake of politics. Our marriage will cement my hold on the throne. You will be an empress with all the wealth and splendor a woman could ever want.
You might hold the palace for now. But the church won't sit idle. Once the riots are quelled, they'll put you...
Raoul had opened a wooden box on the dais, lowering the front side to reveal its gruesome contents. She recognized the pale features of the prelate, and it was very clear that the Elector Council's remains were contained in the other boxes.
As you can see, the church is no longer a concern. With the Brotherhood firmly under my command, thanks to the largesse of my benefactor... None remain in the city who can challenge me.
He laid a hand on the box holding the prelate's head.
Call it a wedding gift from your betrothed. After all, these are the men who killed your real father.
No.
The people of Otha will never stand for it.
The people will do whatever their Lord Governor demands of them.
And what of the mob gathered outside your gate?
Those who refuse to obey will be dealt with harshly and permanently.
There aren't enough sacred dogs in Otha to subdue the entire city, even recalling the nearest garrison.
I have other resources at my disposal, my dear.
A shadow detached itself from the darkness draping the wall behind the throne. The shadow resolved into the shape of a man, tall and lean, garbed in a monk's robe of purest black. There was something eerie about his movements. The intensity of his gaze was unnerving. An image flashed through Josie's mind of the ebon serpent uncoiling from the ceiling in Kame's apartment, and she knew what this creature was at once. Sorcerer, trafficker of the black arts, agent of the Dark Ones.
What have you leagued yourself with?
A power from beyond this world, enough to rule a nation and rebuild an empire. You should thank me, Princess. I intend to restore your birthright.
Whatever Ral intended to say next was interrupted. Sacred Brothers ushered a throng of men and women into the hall. She recognized one face in the group, Anastasia's father, Lord Farthington. She started to lift her hand to catch his attention, but hesitated when she got a better look at him. Lord Farthington looked drawn and haggard, his face more deeply lined than she remembered. He was clearly terrified.
My lords and esteemed ladies, forgive this disturbance of your persons at such a late hour, but there are matters of great importance at hand which require your attention.
Josie cast her gaze about the chamber. When the aristocrats arrived, the robed man had vanished as silently as a phantom, but she got the feeling he was nearby. She sidled over to a side wall, pretending to admire the tapestries while she checked the exits. She didn't know the layout of the palace very well, but if she could get away from the hall, she might be able to find a way out. Behind her, Ral climbed the dais. On his way up the steps, he kicked over one of the wooden boxes, sending its contents tumbling to the floor.
Good people, don't be alarmed. This is a glorious moment. This is the day you shall long remember as the beginning of a new era of prosperity and majesty.
Rao sat in the center throne. A pair of golden ravens rested atop the throne's tall back, as if perched upon his shoulders.
Nobles of Otha, I proclaim myself your sovereign. As a merciful man, I am granting you the opportunity to be the first to bow to me and swear your allegiance.
He gestured to the wooden boxes.
Or be declared traitors and face immediate execution.
Josie picked up her skirt and tiptoed to a narrow archway tucked between two arrays. She was almost there when a large frame filled the opening.
Hello, Josie.
Marcus's scarred cheeks twitched into a mockery of a smile.
It is time for your most excellent personages to meet my betrothed. Allow me to present Princess Josephine of the House of Coronado.
Tears formed in Josie's eyes as she turned to the crowd. They watched her with various degrees of astonishment. Ral extended a hand from the throne.
Come, my dear. Stand beside me so we can address our subjects together.
As Marcus took her arm in a painful grip, Josie moved her feet to keep from being dragged across the tiles. She cast her gaze about the hall, hands bunched into the folds of her skirt, hoping desperately to see Kame. Another nightfall greeted Kame on his return to Othar. He didn't need to use the Arepto's tomb tunnel. The soldiers had abandoned the gates, and for good reason. The city had been destroying itself in a tumult of blood and fire. He slipped in through the Black Gate and stalked down streets scarred by fighting and mayhem. A smoky miasma hung over the city. The processional was in shambles, with sodden furniture, broken street lamps, and heaps of trash, some draped with dead bodies. Makeshift barriers showed where the city's forces had tried to contain the violence and failed. Above the carnage, Celestial Hill loomed over the rooftops, its pristine walls gleaming like ivory in the moonlight.
This place is a mess. Are you sure you're going to be able to find him?
I'm going to try.
A light rain filled the cracks in the street and collected in shallow pools. With knives drawn, Kame watched the dark nooks and doorways on either side of his path. His father's sword hung between his shoulder blades with strange familiarity. He wasn't sure why he had taken it. His knives had served him well enough these many years, but he was running on instinct now, and taking it had felt like the right thing to do. From time to time, he found himself reaching up to touch the chagrin-wrapped hilt, and a shiver would run through his arm. After this night was over, he'd be happy to bury the thing again. As he entered the gutters, Kame almost ran into the backs of a gang of citizens. They marched down the center of the street, truncheons in hand. With soot and bloodstains on their clothing, they looked like they had already seen some fighting. He waited until they passed. By its looks, Ale Street had escaped the worst of the rioting so far. Outside the Blue Vine, a man's body in the uniform of the Night Watch was sprawled in the gutter beside an overturned cart.
I'll check around back.
Kame stared across the street. Slivers of light leaked from gaps around the wine shop's shuttered windows. He crossed the swampy street and nudged open the door. Faces looked up as he stepped into the common room. Half a dozen men and one woman sat around the hearth. Several hands stole inside clothing to reach for hidden surprises, but one look from him was enough to stop them cold. Mother stood behind the bar. A heavy mallet rested on the counter beside her, the kind used for breaking open cask bungs, or caving in the skulls of young soldiers.
I'm looking for Hubert.
He ain't here. Haven't seen him.
Since when?
Earlier, before sunset.
Any idea where he is now?
A bearded man stood up, clutching a stick of firewood in his fist.
You'll get out of here if you know what's good, young buck.
Kame stared at the speaker. After half a dozen heartbeats, the bearded man settled back in his seat.
Oh, don't mind him, Kame. You're a welcome sight. Hubert came by a few hours ago when the fighting took a turn for the bad, and he grabbed up all the men to go with him.
She shot a scornful look at the group huddled around the hearth.
At least, all the real men. Anyways, no telling when he'll be back.
I'll wait.
Drink?
With a nod, Kame took a seat. He tucked his knives away, but kept them loose in their sheaths. Kit floated down from the ceiling and alighted beside him.
Nothing out there. There's some skirmishing over in the next block, but it seems to be moving away from this part of town. The worst is down by the docks. I think someone set fire to the city granaries.
That should keep the tin men busy.
I don't know. The harbor is out of control. I didn't see any soldiers, not any live ones at least.
Mother brought over his drink and set it on the table.
Don't know if you'll want to be finding Hubert just now, Kame. He wasn't in his right mind when he left, if you take my meaning.
No, I don't. What happened?
Well, 'tisn't for me to say. But you got a right to know what you're walking into.
Three men entered. Kame almost didn't recognize the young men in their midst. Bloodstains marred Hubert's once fine clothes, and his hat was missing. By the gore slimed on its hilt, the rapier strapped to his hip had seen some use this night. The young nobleman's gaze had a strange cast as it swept through the taproom. When it settled on Kame, a vicious smile twisted Hubert's bruised lips.
Mother! We have a hero among us. Set this man up with another drink on me.
He came over to Kame's table, followed by a pair of thick-shouldered goons.
I'm not here to drink, Hubert. I came looking for your help.
Hubert's bodyguards, or whatever they were, watched the room.
My help? I'm a little busy right now, Kame. Tonight is the moment of our grand coup. We've got the Reds on the run. But you already know that, don't you? You paved the way, so to speak.
What are you talking about, Hubert?
Playing the innocent, Kame? There's no need, I assure you. You can take full credit for my father. He was, after all, a tyrant at heart.
Kame had a sinking suspicion he knew the answer, but asked anyway.
What about him?
He's dead, Kame! Someone entered his rooms at the palace last night and killed him. Then they took his head. A bit macabre of you, but it was a nice touch.
Kame remembered Matthias lying in his bed with his heart cut out. What had Rouse said at the Golden Wheel? Something about taking matters into his own hands? Vasily must have been Rouse's secret patron. It made sense. With the backing of a council member, Rouse would have felt untouchable. But at some point, he decided he didn't need the archpriest. So he had devised his own plans, which somehow involved Josie. It might already be too late. She could be dead. He had to remain in control. If she was alive, that was the only way to save her.
And you think I had something to do with it?
Hubert leaned forward until their faces were inches apart. The reek of whiskey hit Kame like a punch to the jaw.
Oh, Kame the Knife! Slayer of the corrupt and powerful! But my father wasn't some goddamned monster. He did this city a lot of good.
So much good his own son was out to unseat him?
You don't know anything about it!
Kit materialized behind the two Bravos, who looked ready to move in.
You better do something, Kame. These guys are carrying a lot of hardware.
Kame had never seen Hubert like this.
Listen to me, Hubert. I didn't kill your father, or any of the other Elector counselors. That was Ral. He's working with someone, a foreigner. They're plotting to take over the government. They killed the Archpriest.
A pretty tale. But there's no need to deny it. You've done us all a great service.
I was out of the city taking Josie somewhere safe. Or that I thought was safe.
Ah, yes! The conspirator's daughter and her faithful knight in shining armor.
Hubert reached for the cup on the table and Kame caught the young man's wrist.
That's enough.
Hubert's reddened eyes stabbed at Kame. Then, his features crumbled into a ruin of misery.
Why did they have to butcher him like that? I know he could be a hard man, even cruel sometimes. But they had no right.
Kame released Hubert.
The people responsible are the same ones I'm after. They took Josie and now they're holed up in the palace with a battalion of tin men.
Hubert wiped his face with a coat sleeve.
What are you going to do?
Storm the palace and get her back.
Really? That's your plan?
What about you, Hubert?
I've been rousing the people. We already control most of Lowtown. We could use your help, but it sounds like you've got enough on your plate.
We could work together.
Hubert looked more like his old self now. He sat up straighter in the chair.
How?
You might control Lowtown, but the Brotherhood still holds everything above the processional. You'll never take Hightown with a rabble of shopkeeps and stevedores, so don't even try. Go straight to Celestial Hill.
Well, what will that accomplish?
We'll cut off the head of the beast. With Rao and his lieutenants out of the way, there'll be no one to coordinate their soldiers. Once we control the palace, the city will fall to us by default.
That's a big risk. My father died taking a chance like that.
Kame drew his knives and set them on the table. The bodyguard shifted, but kept their distance.
You're not your father, Hubert. Prove it tonight. Help me save Josie and put down this menace for good. She's the heir to the old emperor. We found the documents to prove it. She's royalty.
Royalty, eh? Well, she certainly acted the part. But why should my people risk their lives just to trade one tyrant for another?
Because she's not her father either. She's what this country needs to knit itself back together. You always talk about a return to the old ways. This is your chance to prove it. This could either be Nymir's last night as a unified realm, or the beginning of a better life for us all.
Hubert eyed the blades, and then nodded.
I'm in. What do you want me to do?
Kame smiled across the table.
I've got a plan.
Rain pelted him as Kame crouched in the half-finished bell tower of the new cathedral. No stars shined this night, and no moon. Only a screen of tumultuous storm clouds stretched across the city. A good night for killing. Hightown spread below him in a carpet of gray and black. Celestial Hill rose against the sky like a great wave. Lightning flashed, and the bleached shoals of white rooftops appeared momentarily. Flames flickered along the Celestial's broad avenues, where 1,000 plebeians struggled against the city militias. True to his word, young Vasily had assembled an army. Milliners and bakers, porters and servants, armed with all manner of weapons, from torches and lengths of raw timber to pikes stolen from slain tin men. Their goal was the Luchin Palace, sprawled atop Celestial Hill like a crowning jewel, surrounded by concentric walls with watchtowers and massive barbicans. Hubert's spies reported that Ral had withdrawn all of his pet soldiers inside in anticipation of a siege. Exactly what Kame wanted him to do.
They're almost in position. I heard Hubert say he doesn't expect much resistance.
Well, they'll fight back. They don't have any choice.
It's really burning out of control.
Kame turned his head. Billows of ugly black smoke shrouded the burrows of Lowtown. Fire had claimed entire blocks, devouring homes, storefronts, and public buildings in its wrath. The rain was the only thing keeping the blazes contained, but many would die before morning. More would die if Kane's plan didn't succeed. Hubert's people had finally made it to the palace gates. The young nobleman was a tiny figure striding at their head, his sword flashing in the torchlight. His assault got a reaction. Like a kicked anthill, masses of soldiers rushed to defend the walls. Arrows filled the air, and men spilled their lives into the overflowing gutters.
That'll do.
Kane descended from the tower. Hubert was buying him the window of opportunity he needed. Kit floated beside him as he dropped to the cathedral's marshy grounds and started up the winding boulevards to Celestial Hill. Within minutes, they reached the outer wall of the palace at a spot well away from the fighting. Kane had already scouted his entry point. The stone of this section of wall was riddled with cracks and creeping vegetation that created convenient handholds. He took his time and made sure each hold was firm before trusting his weight to it. At the top, he crawled over the smooth apex and dropped down the other side. Kane paused at the foot of the wall. A manicured lawn extended toward his next obstacle, the 40-foot interior wall of the palace. Beautiful gardens filled the space between, adorned with delicate flower trees and swollen streams. Kane passed through the luxurious grounds without a second glance.
Kane?
Kit spotted the first sentry under the branches of a redbud tree. Kane squatted behind a hedge of flowery bushes and watched. The soldier was looking toward the palace gatehouse, possibly waiting for his relief. Kane got up and started toward the tree. He kept low and worked his way around behind the sentry. He could pass by unseen, but tonight wasn't a time for taking chances. As he moved into position, Kane found not a knife in his hands, but the leather cord from Josie's necklace, wrapped around his palms with a foot of length stretched between. He clenched the key amulet in his fist as he stole up behind the sentry. His heart beat harder. He had never strangled anyone before. Some stray dogs years ago when he had been living on the streets and it had been kill or starve to death, but never a man. He supposed it was all the same. Then, the moment was upon him. Kane slipped the cord around the guard's neck and pulled tight. His arms were nearly wrenched from their sockets as the man lurched forward. The guard fought like a wild animal. If not for the key, which Kane gripped like a garrote handle, the cord would have been ripped from him. As it was, the loops of leather sawed into his left hand until he started to fear he might lose the fingers. The sentry stumbled to the wet grass and Kane kept up his hold, and it was a lucky thing because his victim fought for a good long time. Minutes passed before the guard was still. Kane stood up, a little shaky. His hands and wrists ached like he'd been wrestling a bear. As he unwound the cord from his stiff fingers, a flicker of lightning lit up the gardens, and he got a glimpse of his victim's face. It was a sight he could have done without. Worse, he was a kid, maybe 17 at most. Kane's gaze fell to the crimson surcoat covering the youth's armor. Not a kid, a soldier, an enemy. Kane wrapped the cord around his wrist again. After hiding the body in a clump of tall fronds, Kane continued forward. Another 50 paces brought him to the foot of the inner wall. No sign of additional sentries. He ran a hand across the granite facing. Too smooth to climb, and too hard for pitons. From around his waist, he uncoiled 10 fathoms of braided silk cord, a gift from one of Hubert's contacts.
Are you sure you can manage this?
I'll meet you on the other side. You remember the plan?
She gave him a withering look.
I'll be there. Just make sure you don't take too long.
Then she was gone. Kane attached his grapnel to the line and measured out 7 times his own height. Fortune favored him. The sharp prongs caught on the first try. Kane pulled the line taut and listened for signs of movement above. After 60 heartbeats of silence, he began his ascent. Foot by foot he climbed, the wetness making it difficult. At the top, he grabbed hold and hoisted himself onto the curved capstone. He lay there, heart pounding against the stone as he peeked over the side. Several large buildings crowded the inner bailey, which was floored with rectangular blocks of pale gray stone. The old imperial residence, where the Elector Council now held its sessions, dominated the center. Flying buttresses radiated out from the main structure like the legs of a colossal insect. Lofty towers surrounded the great central dome, which was painted in gold leaf. Lesser buildings abutted along the inside of the wall, a barracks and stables for the palace guard on the Bailey's east end, on the west side, the Thurum House. The Thurum had been the body of state elders responsible for advising the emperors of old. Of course, as one of its first acts after gaining power, the church abolished the assembly. For many Nemeans, it remained the singular most heinous misuse of power, and was the spark for rebellious elements like the Azure Hawks. A few cloaked sentries patrolled the courtyard in pairs, but the majority, it seemed, had taken Hubert's bait and rushed to the outer walls. Kame prayed that they would remain there. He didn't fancy the idea of running into a patrol of angry soldiers as he wandered the citadel. Kit appeared on the wall beside him, her legs dangling over the side.
Is this as far as you've gotten? You need to get moving or we'll be here till midsummer.
I count 8 down below.
And 4 in a guard shack.
No one up top?
No, I guess they're afraid of a little rain.
That's good for us.
Kame unhooked the grapnel and let the line fall to the ground. Pulling with his arms and pushing with his toes, he slithered along the top of the wall until he reached the near corner of the Thurum House. Then he got to his feet. While Kit levitated beside him, he tried to dry his hands on his sodden tunic. The Thurum House was an older style of building, with tall lancet windows, deep ledges, and elaborate fluting. Ideal for climbing, but the edifice rose more than 100 feet above the bailey. One slip would mean a quick end to his career.
Get on with it, will you? Before daybreak?
Kame shot her a nasty glare as he found his first handholds and started up. He put his mind on other matters while he climbed. His next problem was how to find Josie within the confines of the palace. He was counting on the belief that Rao wouldn't harm her until the last of the riots were put down and he had firm control of the city. Kame didn't realize he had climbed so far until he reached the ornamental cornice jutting from the edge of the roof. Teetering on a narrow shelf, he leaned out to grab the overhang. Then, with a prayer, he let go with his feet. The palace grounds spun beneath him as Kame swung out over empty space. The guards' torches were tiny sparks far below. His side burned like a hot coal shoved under his skin. He pulled himself over the lip. He rested on the rooftop to catch his breath. The rain felt good on his skin.
Come on, Kame!
He rolled to his feet. With a wind whipping past his head, Kame crossed the slippery roof. Scaling down the building's eastern facade was easier. Halfway down the wall, he stopped and inched along a narrow ledge. A tapered buttress arched out like a slender bridge from a corbel set in the side of the building to support the towering walls of the Imperial residence. Kame didn't stop to think. He just stepped onto the slick stone blocks and walked, arms held out to either side like a tightrope acrobat. Halfway across, a gust of wind swirled from below to disrupt his balance. He froze as his feet began to slip out from under him, but he clenched his toes and forced himself to stand rigid until the gust died down. With a racing pulse, he continued on and reached the other side without further delay. As he touched down on the roof of the residence, Kame took a moment to gain his bearings. Battlements studded the top of the building like rows of teeth. Minarets rose at each of the 4 corners. Kame leaned over an embrasure between 2 stone merlons. The soldiers below marched in the same pattern as before. No one had seen him. Satisfied, he jogged over to where Kit hovered above a massive chimney stack. He jumped to catch the top and pulled himself up. Balanced over the black abyss of the flue, he unlimbered the bundles from his back and tied them to his belt.
I hate this pot.
I'm sure it won't be so bad. Just think happy thoughts.
He lowered himself into the chimney. The space was not as tight as he'd feared. With his back braced against one side, he could use his knees and hands to control his descent. 15 feet down, he came to the first branch shaft, the top floor. He levered himself inside the chute and crawled down its dark, narrow passage, dragging the bundles behind him. He encountered a low-hanging projection with his head. And after rubbing his bruised brow with a sooty hand, he dropped to his belly to wriggle underneath. As Kame continued down the chute, he came to a junction of 4 shafts. He hesitated a moment, comparing his position to his mental layout of the palace. Straight ahead should take him to the central hall. So decided, he continued. A current of warm air buffeted him as he crawled around a slight bend. He stopped at the edge of a pit. Specks of burning cinders floated up from the opening, which glowed with the light of a roaring fire below. He peered over the edge and had to squint against the scorching heat. The shaft continued on the other side. 5 paces. On his feet, he could have made the jump without a second thought, but it was a long way to leap on his hands and knees. Kit chose that moment to appear from the ceiling.
You're almost there. Just a few more paces and a short dip.
Dip?
Just hurry, will you?
Kame fought the urge to say something she would make him regret later. Instead, he gathered his legs under him as best he could and braced his hands against the walls. He let a deep breath of the heated air fill his lungs, and he leapt. The fire's heat bathed his torso as he sailed across the distance. Then his fingertips caught the ledge. Muscles rigid, he held himself aloft. The 2 bundles dangled beneath him. Smoke stung his eyes. For several seconds, he dangled over the chasm like a hog on a spit. When his heart stilled its maddening pace, he kicked with both legs. His hands grasped at the smooth stone of the shaft, and he pulled himself the rest of the way up. Once he was across, he flipped onto his back. Kit's head poked through the ceiling.
You all right?
You might have mentioned the fireplace.
And deprive you of a little fun? You know, you're getting boring in your old age. I might have to go looking for a younger guy. Someone with a sense of adventure.
I could be so lucky.
Kame rolled over onto his stomach and resumed his crawl.
What did you say?
Nothing, dear.
The shaft extended a 12 paces farther before it sloped downward at a sharp angle. Faint light filtered through a gap at the bottom of the drop-off. Kame took a few moments to figure out how to best tackle this obstacle. He tried to twist around to put his feet forward, but the shaft was too narrow. He finally decided to drop head first. With luck, he wouldn't come down too hard. As he was bracing himself for the descent, Kame was surrounded by a sudden chill in the air. It cut through his thin clothing and bit deeper, down into his bones. For a moment, he felt as if his heart were going to stop. Then, it was gone.
I don't like this, Kit. Keep an eye out, eh? Kit?
He looked around as much as the shaft allowed, but there was no sign of her. She could be scouting ahead without being told, although that sounded too good to be true.
Wonderful goddamn time to wander off.
But he didn't have time to ponder her sudden absence. He had to keep moving. Kame wedged his hands against opposite walls and let go. He bit down on his tongue as the bottom of the chute rushed up faster than he anticipated. The blackened stone gouged his palms, but he kept up the pressure until he hit the bottom. Somehow he managed to land without bashing his skull open.
Hell's breath.
He disengaged himself from the bundle's tether. He touched the tip of his tongue to his lips. At least it was still attached. The slight illumination he had detected before came from an open doorway on the other side of the room, leading to a corridor that glowed with soft candlelight. The plain coverlet draped over the plush oversized bed, along with a lack of personal effects, led him to believe this was a guest room, presently unused. But why was the door open? It was rather late for a dusting by the chambermaid. Suspicious, Kame gathered up the bundles and padded across the sea-green rug. Outside in the hallway, colorful arrays lined the walls in both directions. Candles flickered in brass holders. His soft-soled boots made no sound as he stalked down the corridor. He chose the right-hand branch, followed it to a T-section, and turned left until he came to another intersection. Kame was considering his next choice when a faint sound reached his ears. Judging by the sound, the speakers were in a large room, like the Grand Hall. Kame stole toward the noise. Every time he passed a candle, he reached up to snuff its wick. The passage behind him filled with darkness. The corridor opened into a wide gallery. A carved marble balustrade overlooked the massive chamber below. Sacred brothers were stationed at regular intervals around the balcony, 4 in all. Kame left the bundles in the dark of the hallway and drew his knives. 2 brothers died without realizing their lives were in danger. He allowed the 3rd to utter a small sound, which drew the last sentry into the shadows. Only when the gallery was clear did Kame take a moment to peer over the railing. His throat constricted as he spotted Josie, still alive, thank the gods, standing at the foot of the broad dais in a white gown. She didn't appear to have suffered any harm. In fact, she looked better than when he had left her at the cabin. A weight he hadn't fully realized he was carrying lifted from his chest. He hadn't failed her yet. A large crowd filled the chamber below, surrounded by a platoon of Sacred Brothers. Despite their bedraggled appearance, the captives seemed to be aristocrats, many of them in their senior years. Expressions of fear and indignation played across their pinched faces. Josie wasn't the only one Kame recognized. Ral, in a fancy black suit, sat in a gaudy throne atop the dais. One at a time, the captives were brought before him and made to kneel. While Kame watched, the brothers escorted an elderly lord in a night jacket to the steps of the dais. When they released him, the nobleman stood up, as tall as his stooped back, aloud.
I will bow to no usurper! I would rather die!
And I shall gladly grant your wish, my lord.
Look out! Take your hands!
The brothers dragged him from the hall. Mystified, Kame went back to retrieve the bundles. When he opened one and grabbed the sword's worn hilt, a voice whispered in his head.
Justice.
The voice of his father's ghost. Kame's hand shook. He wanted to throw away the blade, but a powerful force held him back. He shook his head, as much to deny the unease churning inside him as to clear it, and slung the sword onto his back. He carried the second bundle to the balcony, cut the strings binding its oilskin covering, and unlimbered his other gift from Hubert, the curved bronzewood shaft of a bow to replace the one he'd lost in the fire. Kame strung the weapon with quick, sure motions. As he stood up, he placed an arrow across the rest and drew the string to full tension. The confusing maelstrom of emotions roiling in his chest, for Josie, for his father, for Kit's disappearance, they all vanished as he sighted on the throne. He was back in his element. This was business, pure and uncomplicated. The arrow flew, a perfect shot. In his mind's eye, Ral slumped dead on the throne, his eyes turned misty with a fog of death. The image was so real, Kame almost believed it had already happened, until the torchlight surrounding the dais flickered and the arrow dipped to the side. Not much, a hand's breadth, but enough to just miss its mark. The hairs on the back of Kame's neck tingled as he remembered another night in Ostrogoth's castle, and another perfect shot ruined at the last moment.
The Victus.
Everyone in the hall looked up. Josie's eyes blossomed wide. Some of the brothers drew weapons, but none moved to protect their liege. As for Ral, he hardly moved except to grimace and press his left hand against his chest. Kame snatched another arrow from the bundle at his feet. Sweat drenched his shirt. Tremors chased each other through his stomach like a pack of angry dogs, but his hands were steady.
Let it go, Ral, or the next one goes through your heart!
We've been expecting you, Kame, but you're a bit late. Release my betrothed? No, I don't believe I will. The city is mine, and these good nobles were just swearing their loyalty to me. It would go better if you lay down your weapons and surrendered. Perhaps I'll grant you an imperial pardon.
I don't think so. There are 5,000 angry citizens outside the gates. Your pet soldiers won't be able to hold them off forever.
Ral stood with his hands at his sides, seemingly at rest, but Kame knew how fast the man could move. He kept the arrow centered on Ral's chest.
Not forever. Just until reinforcements arrive from the outer garrisons. Then your little rebellion will be crushed in time for my coronation and subsequent wedding to this fine lady.
Kame's gaze flickered to Josie, and fingers of dread closed around his heart. In concentrating on Ral, he hadn't noticed Marcus. Bandages peeked over the collar of the man's uniform, which was now white instead of red. He stood behind Josie, one arm around her waist, and the other holding a dirk to her slender throat.
You should have joined me. You could have been my viceroy, a man of wealth and power. But you have proved too untrustworthy. I'm afraid you'll have to die.
He nodded to Marcus.
Or perhaps you'd prefer to watch Josie bleed to death before your eyes first.
You won't kill her. You need her too much.
Are you certain about that?
Ral lifted a finger. A line of blood trickled down Josie's neck. Marcus's burn-scarred lips curved upward in a grin.
Hell's breath!
His plan was falling apart. Rather than rescuing Josie, he had placed her in even greater danger. Retreat wasn't an option. Come morning, Ral's hold over the city might be impregnable. Kame could shoot, but Marcus might kill Josie out of hand. They were at an impasse. and he was out of options. The bowstring strained against his fingers.
My lord!
All heads turned as a soldier in militia livery dashed into the audience hall.
My lord! The outer gates have fallen!
Damn it! What of the Bailey?
We hold it yet, but it may not stand for long.
Looks like your plot is unraveling around you, Ral. Maybe you should give up now and save everyone the trouble.
But by this point, one of the guards had armed his crossbow and fired. Kame threw himself aside as the baluster before him shattered in a shower of marble shrapnel. Kame re-aimed his bow and let fly. Rao ducked behind a powdered dowager. The arrow passed over their shoulders into the leg of the vacated throne. Kame reached for another arrow, but Rao was already darting across the crowded hall. Kame threw down the bow and vaulted over the broken balustrade. His knives cleared their sheaths before he hit the floor. Heels stinging from the impact, he raced after his adversary.
Kame!
Rao and Marcus hustled Josephine through a side exit and slammed the door behind them. Three brothers took up positions in front of the exit with weapons bared. Kame smiled as a familiar feeling spread through him. A tingling that started in the tips of his fingers and vibrated up his arms until it coursed through his entire being. Sparks of light glimmered on weapon points and flashed from rings of mail, igniting his blood. An insistent pressure throbbed behind his breastbone as his powers awakened, but this time he welcomed it like a long-lost brother. It was time to put aside the veneer of civilization and revel in pure barbarity. He launched himself at the soldiers. Rao dragged Josie along the candlelit hallway.
This doesn't change anything. One madman can't change the course of history.
Josie was too jubilant to care what Rao said. Ever since her assault at the cabin, she had been terrified to discover what Rao and Marcus would do next. But when she'd seen Kame in the Grand Hall, her heart had jumped. He had come for her. She looked around for some means to get away from her captors, but there wasn't much hope of that. Rao was much stronger than he looked, and Marcus followed them with a squad of sacred brothers. She was racking her brain for a plan when the corridor opened into a wide anteroom. A menagerie of stuffed animal heads on the walls seemed to watch as Rao hustled her through.
We'll go north. Assurances have been given. Whatever else they take, I'm to have the capital. I've done my part. Then, after the city's been tamed, I will return to begin my reign. He'll see who's the better man.
You sound frightened.
Josie couldn't help herself from taunting him, trying to hurt him as she had been hurt. She didn't know whom he meant by they, but she hardly cared anymore.
You should be. Kame's not going to show you any mercy.
He had his chance 2 nights ago, and he fled like the coward he is.
Josie didn't believe a word of it. Kame was like a force of nature, as unstoppable as the tide. However, if Rao could get outside the city, he might be able to take her beyond Kame's reach. Rao stopped on the other side of the trophy room and pointed to one of the sergeants.
You, come with me. The rest of you wait here. Do whatever it takes, Marcus, but stop him. When I return, you'll have everything I promised, lands and title.
Marcus glanced at Josie, his scarred face rigid with tight lines. Clearly, he wanted to object, but he merely nodded.
He won't get past us. Fever speed your journey and hasten your return, my liege.
With a embarrassed nod, Rao dragged Josie along. He thrust her down another corridor. She looked around for something, anything, to slow their progress. When they passed a steep flight of stairs, Josie bit down hard on Rao's knuckles. Rao shoved her away. Josie hiked up her skirt, kicked off her slippers, and dashed up the steps. The staircase turned back on itself twice before letting out in a narrow passageway of bare stone. She needed someplace to hide. She turned a corner and ran past several closed doors. She grabbed at their handles, but they were all locked. She Kame to another flight of steps and rushed up them. The stairs rose on and on above her in a dizzying tunnel of steps and railings. As she rounded a heavy stone newel post, a sinewy hand grabbed her ankle. She kicked and clawed, but the grip wouldn't let go. Rao pulled himself up her body, crawling over her in a disturbing imitation of a lover's ardor. She didn't see his other hand until it smashed into her cheek. It knocked her against a wall and scattered her senses. She was hardly aware as he draped her over his shoulder.
This way, Sergeant!
Josie struggled to keep her eyes open, even as a gray blankness threatened to overtake her. It was over. She had lost. Now Kame would never find them. Then, a gust of freezing wind blew up her dress. Raindrops splattered on her back. When she lifted her head, she saw not the pavers of the outer courtyard she expected, but sloping gray tiles. They were on the roof of a side wing by the look of it. Torch fires blazed beyond the rampart, where a great mass of people swarmed. Rao came to the end of the roof and stood at the edge of the abyss. There was nowhere to go.
Bloody night soil!
He turned back, but something gave him pause. He set her down and drew his sword, pressing the tip against her back.
Don't move a hair on that pretty head, princess. I wouldn't want you to fall to your death.
Josie swayed in his grip. The tiles were ice cold under her feet. The rain saturated her sodden gown to penetrate her undergarments. At a nod from Rao, the sergeant took a position behind the door back into the palace and lifted a black-headed mace with wicked flanges. They were waiting for someone to come through the doorway.
Came!
Josie tried to wriggle free, but Rao tightened his grip and jabbed her with a sword point. Blinking back raindrops, Josephine watched the open door with growing trepidation.